Hello and welcome to the latest edition of Get Up The Yard. My name is Frank and I'm filling in for Donny this week on the hosting duties as he's away. And this week on Get Up The Yard, we are going to be talking about probably one of the biggest news stories of our time, and one that's been recently featured in a Netflix documentary, which has, I suppose, thrust the subjects back into the spotlight. We are talking, of course, about Madeleine McCann's disappearance 12 years ago in Portugal. To discuss it this week, I'm joined by two podcasting, I suppose, usual aguidos. and John, how are we both?
Not too bad. Raring to go on this one. Yeah. Yeah. All 8 hours.
Yeah. All good, yeah. Frank, for you.
I'm very well. I'm very well. Dangerously well.
Fair enough.
So, look, I suppose, lads, we might as well get straight into it. I think I'm probably right, and I'm sure you guys will agree, in terms of press coverage, if we go back to 2007, and, you know, particularly the first year in any way, I don't think I can ever remember a case getting this amount of coverage of any sort, let alone a kind of a missing child case. And I suppose before I watched the documentary, and I suppose it's a strange one, although it was only 12 years ago, we didn't have as much ease of access to information. A lot of our opinions would have been formed by newspaper headlines and things like that. And I think that was one of the big reasons why people were so split, because the media couldn't really make up their mind on what happened. But thankfully, Netflix released an 8-hour documentary on the whole case. And although I think from talking to you guys off air, we all agree it was probably a little bit too long, it did wrap everything into a kind of nice nutshell and show, I suppose, from different angles how things were manipulated and how people were able to kind of form such contrasting opinions on what happened that night. Having watched the documentary, my opinion is that she was abducted. Is that an opinion that you guys would both share as well?
Yes. Yeah. I think there's the fact that there's no body, you know, just that there was a spate of kidnappings in the area. We found out during the documentary anyway. It just seems that way. I know there's lots of theories about them killing her, but I'm sure we'll get to it. But what do you think, Luxy, yourself?
I didn't go into the documentary, having an opinion as to whether she was abducted or killed by her parents. And when I finished watching the documentary, I don't have an answer. I don't know whether she was abducted, or I don't know whether the parents were involved. I don't know whether it was an accident. The information that I was given, I remember watching it on Sky News, and anytime I was on the internet, it was always front page news. I didn't read that much about it. So I honestly don't know what happened to her. The documentary didn't, did you feel like the documentary had a narrative at any stage, but it was trying to point the finger at anyone?
I think it did. It sort of, at the start, you'd almost suspect them. It was sort of going down that alleyway, you know, with the cadaver dogs and stuff. And then
That seemed to be the turning point from kind of, you know, everyone's looking for a missing girl to, hang on, everyone's looking for a murder suspect.
Yeah, that was the thing that a few years ago, I remember when I heard that, I was thinking, oh, well, look, if they found evidence of a cadaver, because that's how it was sort of presented. The documentary was a good way of showing that the dogs indicated there was a cadaver or evidence, but they never actually found any evidence. It's just the dog barked at that particular spot. So I think the Portuguese police sort of took that as if to say they found evidence of a cadaver, where it was only an indication of evidence. So I think that was kind of released, and that's what fueled a lot of people's to think that they killed her, you know, because if you hear something like that, that's fairly damning, you know.
It is, but like, if you think about the fact there was a cadaver found in the room by the dogs, that would assume that the body had enough time to decompose. And if you look at the timeline of when they found her and alerted the police, I don't think the body would have been deceased long enough for it to decompose and release the smell into the room for a dog to pick up on months later.
And they raised the alarm fairly quickly.
Apparently,
like she went out screaming, you know, after she went in on her checks. She went out and she raised the alarm that Madeline was missing. And the way she said they abducted her. I think that's how she phrased it. Or they've taken Madeline. And, you know, some people sort of take that phrase as a bit suspicious, as if to say, well, how are you so sure someone's taken her? And then when she talks about it, she said, well, she wouldn't have been able to open the window. She wouldn't have been able to climb out the window. She was only three. She was a little tot, you know. The window wouldn't have been able to have been opened by her. So it's things like this where it's people sort of assume that this is suspicious behavior, but it's not really when you think of it. And not to mention the fact that she would have been panicked.
She would have been, but weren't the twins in the same room that she was sleeping in?
That was one thing. I had a conversation with this with a few people.
That's the thing I can't get away from. If she was abducted, did someone go into the room and take Madeline and exit the room without the twins waking up once?
Well,
how do you know they didn't, though, Luxie?
Yeah. They were clearly heavy sleepers, you know.
Yeah, the twins could have woken up just thinking it was, you know, one of the group taking Madeline. And then just nodded back to sleep, because I know one part of the documentary focused heavily on, you know, when there was so much coming and going during the initial crime scene investigation that the twins never woke up. And that tried to create a narrative of, you know, a deep sleep that wasn't particularly normal. But like anyone who's ever, you know, been abroad on a kid's holiday, you know, when the kids are up from 7 a.m, they're swimming, they're constantly playing, they're in heat. Like, you know, they do just knock out and go into a deep sleep. And you even see that by, and I know, I'm sure we'll come on to the sightings of people carrying children and things like that. Like, that's a very common sight in resorts, because kids are just in a very deep sleep, parents carrying them, you know, from wherever they are to back to bed or whatever. Like, that for me didn't cause suspicion.
Thing is, though, if they were in such a deep sleep, it raised the possibility that they, as the police suggested, that they were given sleeping pills or Calpol that completely knocked them out.
Yeah.
Which,
but like,
if you're given Calpol for an earache or something, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's nefarious. You know, it's just that if they have, you know, maybe they were on a drowsy medicine, it's not really indicative of or overdosing them on, you know.
No, but like the police suggested that their explanation for her disappearance is that one of the parents accidentally gave her sleeping pills or too much Calpol, which had adverse reaction to it, and that they somehow got rid of the body, which I find really hard to believe, because Jerry McCann is a surgeon, Kate McCann is a GP. They know medicine. Mm-hmm. They know the correct dosages. So that
I think Kate actually specialised in anaesthetics as well.
Yeah, she would have done. And then how would they have gotten rid of the body so quickly?
That's the, I suppose, if you were to believe that they killed her, it's the getting rid of the body would be the most obvious thing.
Yeah, and like, the police,
they're not familiar with their surroundings. Yeah. You know, they don't know, oh, here's a spot I could do it.
No,
I don't see it.
No, sure. Like, it'd be, like, if you think about Rashley, it'd be hard enough to do if you knew the area itself. But you're on holiday in a completely foreign country. You don't know the lay of land. You don't know the landscape. You don't know where to, you wouldn't have a clue what to do in that situation. So I didn't buy the police angle whatsoever, but, you know, one thing you have to say is that the parents are guilty of her disappearance. It is absolute gross negligence to go off and have a few drinks and have some dinner while your kids are left alone in a room in an apartment.
I agree to an extent. I think they're guilty of neglect, but if somebody else comes in and takes them, they're the ones responsible. You know, they are definitely, you know, they weren't watching her, you know, so they're guilty of that. But, you know, if she was abducted, you know, they could have been sleeping in their beds while it happened as well. You know, they could have been, you know, in the shower or something like that. It is one of those things where I'm sure they kick themselves every day, you know, just if only we just stayed in that night. And, you know, they were doing that every single night as well. I think five nights.
But do you not think it's like a really brazen act to, like, let's say she was abducted. You'd have to assume that there was some type of surveillance done on the apartment and the family, their comings and goings.
There was reports of unusual looking people standing around there.
Yeah, there always is, though. always that was someone weird was hanging around the scene and looking a bit dodgy. Like when they were focused on that in the documentary, I just went, that's bullshit. There's not one case of a disappearance where you haven't heard that being mentioned in some fashion or another. It just seems like the type of headline that you have to throw out.
I suppose it came up in the whole in the documentary as well that the hotel had actually written down somewhere in the restaurant that these five apartments will have their parents would be outside of the apartment for, you know, this 2 hours at a time or something like that. So yeah, it was possible for someone to have read this and know exactly which apartment. This only came out during the documentary. It's the first time I've seen it anyway.
Yeah, I just
extremely careless.
Yeah, I just find it to be like a really brazen act to walk into the apartment knowing that the parents are 100 meters away. And that's one thing that I remember clearly. I remember clearly when I first heard about it that the McCanns and the people they were with clearly said it, that they had a clear line of view to the apartment. It was later.
But then they said that they wouldn't have seen the doorway. It would have only been the window. It would have been obscured. Like, they would see the apartment, but not necessarily the door or the side door.
So if she was taken, it could only have been from the side window.
As far as I know, do you know, Frank, I think they couldn't see the actual entrance to the door. I think they could only see the building.
I don't think they had a...
Not sure.
So I think they could see kind of... Now, it was kind of blocked by hedgerow and things like that, but I think they could see onto their balcony, but they certainly, like, they wouldn't have had it because it was quite elevated, the apartment. But I don't think they would have had a clear view of it, and especially at night time, you know?
Yeah, a few drinks as well.
Yeah. And I think what does them no favours is, there's a couple of things is that, you know, now they may not have had knowledge of this, but, you know, apparently there was reported previously, you know, abductions in the area. They had an option to put the kids into a you know, kind of nighttime care, which was free of charge and, you know, for the purpose of families and adults being able to go out to dinner. And, like, I just don't understand why, if you would do that, why you wouldn't have a baby monitor or something like that, because they were relatively young children. And then the other thing that struck me when looking at the kind of the geographical location of the apartment was, if one of the kids did walk up, and I think it was established that they left the porch unlocked, didn't they?
Yes.
Other members of the group. So if one of the kids did wake up and found their way, couldn't find the parents, decided to look for them, opened the unlocked porch, come down the steps, out the gate, you're onto a main road. You're not into the complex.
Yeah.
You are onto the kind of the side road. So I think... You know, I think when you kind of, I think what went against the McCanns was it seemed so illogical that, you know, people would, you know, educated people who are doctors would create that scenario that forced the Portuguese police to kind of look at, well, hang on, it seems so strange that this would even occur, this type of behavior, that it did it actually occur. Like, and I think that's what, and then of course there was other stuff with the media as well, like, but. I think we'd all agree it was extremely silly by the McCanns, but that doesn't make them guilty of anything other than neglect. You know,
true. What I mean? True. It doesn't mean that they're guilty of a crime. That I absolutely agree with.
And there was probably other parents, and there was actually other parents But I would say that wasn't even the only group there who were engaging in the same act. It was probably. Up until this happened, I'd say it was quite common. You know,
did you not think their reasoning for not putting the kids in the night crash was a bit strange, that they didn't want to disturb the kids at night?
Oh, I did. Absolutely.
Yeah. I found that was one thing that made me think, all right, that is not a normal thing to say. Because as a rational parent, you'd go up, the kids would just go back asleep anyway. You know, you could put your kids in the night crash, which is what they should have done. I know hindsight's a very beautiful thing. It's a very easy thing to say after the fact. But if they're out, and they were out, they weren't having a quiet meal. They're out drinking, having food for hours. And apparently they were going by the apartment every 20 minutes, which was probably bullshit. It's probably once an hour, every hour and a half by the time they got drunk. They should have done is put the kids in the crash. But to say that the only reason why we didn't is because we didn't want to disturb their sleep. Yeah. I found that very strange.
But that would show that they pre-planned it then, you know, if you're going on that angle. I mean, I think it's just, they probably just thought, oh, look, they're they're so tired from, like Frank was saying, you know, they're in the swimming pool all day, they're running around, they just conk out at night. So it's
I think, as I said, it was silly behavior, but it was consistent behavior, because as you said, Sean, it was written in the hotel book that they do this every night. So I would have been extremely suspicious if they put the kids continuously in the night creche, and then the night she went missing, the one night she went missing, they left her at home. That's when I would have been like, oh, that's, hang on, that's a breaking pattern of behavior. But like, they continuously did this, you know, and this was their routine. And that's probably what made them susceptible to the abduction, that they were in a routine of doing this.
I think their version of events, to me anyway, seems to check out. Like, you know, it's there's nothing that I would think, hang on a second, that's crazy. Yeah. It is a kind of consistent narrative that they build, you know. There's some sort of discrepancies about the timeline, about when they went in, exactly what time they went in. But overall, I think it's a little bit unusual, but it's not completely unbelievable that a child would be abducted like that.
Absolutely.
Do you not think it's too perfect, though?
I don't think
as highly intelligent people, which we can assume they are. Could you not, you know, I'm playing devil's advocate, if anyone was going to get away with it, given their credentials, given their academic background, given their profession, I would give them a better advantage than others.
I mean, like, yes and no. Like, it's the...
It doesn't make them guilty. I'm not saying they're guilty, but I'm saying they'd be very well placed intellectually to come up with a narrative, come up with a story. But the thing is, like, for me, it's one of those cases, like, I'm saying this, but then as soon as I say it, I contradict myself by saying,
yeah, I was the same.
They're having dinner with other people, so that assumes that if something did happen, those other people were involved, they're complicit, and for no cracks in the case to appear, for no contradictions in the official statement or narrative that was given by the people that were there on the night where she was abducted, I can't form a solid opinion on the case.
I think, Luxie, that's why it's such a popular case, is because nothing about it makes sense. You know, that well-educated, smart people would do that, but that doesn't obviously mean they're guilty, and we all believe that they're innocent. But then, you know, there's an abduction of a middle-class girl. Like, again, that, you know, that doesn't make sense. That's not generally what the type of person that's abducted, you know what I mean? They usually go for children in poverty because it won't generate much media interest.
Exactly.
So I suppose that's the theory, is that if she was abducted, who abducted her and for what purpose? You know, there's a lot of theories about it. One of them was that it was someone looking for a child, a childless couple looking for a child. Another one was a sex ring, you know, which actually does go on in the world. People aren't really aware of it, but it's, or just an opportunistic person who just decided.
Your friend Alex Jones talks about it, doesn't he, Sean?
yeah, we'll talk about that now. The pedo gay, but I'm not sure. Like, you know, if we all assume, I think you could probably be persuaded, Luxie, that she was abducted anyway.
I can see it. I can.
Yeah. I suppose what I'm getting at is, who do we think abductor? I suppose.
Yeah, because it definitely wasn't. The English fella, Robert Murat, the police going after him was an absolute joke. They went after him three times.
I was just because some reporter said, oh, he's a bit weird. And it was after Ian Huntley. So she thought she was clever.
Yeah, that was it. And it definitely wasn't the Russian 22-year-old that happened to design a website for your man, Robert Murat. And they were saying, but they, you know, they found porn on his computer. Look, if one lad ever said to me, I've never looked at porn, I would call him a liar and I would tell him to shag off, because every lad has done it. It did not make him guilty. I just found it strange that, and that's one thing I remember clearly, as well, as that the English press spent an abnormal amount of time going after the Portuguese police and criticizing them for every single thing that they did. It seemed to be like there was an element of cultural snobbery that our police force are better in England. If our police force were in Portugal, they'd find her. She'd be alive. And I thought that, you know, it was like a hint of xenophobia and racism by the English press towards the Portuguese police and Portugal in general, just because she went to Portugal.
funny enough, it was actually the English police kind of who brought in the cadaver dogs that actually turned in out to make turned the kind of case on its head, where it was like, oh, hang on, there's something not right here, you know. Yeah. So,
do you think the cadaver dogs was just a kind of a fluke, or do you think that indicates anything at all? Or
what I'm saying, so I think with the cadaver dog, Sean, it's too broad. What is a cadaver? Yeah. It's a body or something that's died. Okay, like that's an apartment that God knows how many people had been in, you know. I don't know enough about cadaver, but say if a rat or a mouse died, does that give off the same cadaver, like, you know, the same scent as you know, a human?
No, the dog would have been trying to specifically pick up on a human cadaver odor.
Okay, but like for me, it was just, and then you see when the cadaver and the blood dogs get into the rental car, which was only rented 25 days after she disappeared, and starts picking up the scents again. And now, again, there was issues around how the DNA was interpreted and things like that. But that's, to me, when the whole thing just lost all credibility.
Yeah. It did, because they tried to say that they hid her body in a fridge, and then they got rid of her by using the rental car. And I like to think that these two people were the most scrutinized people by the paparazzi, and every single person wanted a shot of them. They could not move anywhere without someone seeing what they were doing. So to suggest that that's what happened to me was just, I agree, Frank. That's when that thread of thought, I went, no, that's absolute cack. There's no way they would have been able to get rid of that body. The only time they would have been able to get rid of that body, if they did, was the night of, and at no other time.
Mm.
I suppose some of the theories, now again, I don't believe these for a second, but I've started looking at some, like, if you go into this, there's some like Facebook pages and stuff about this. Absolute nutters, like absolute fucking crazy people. I'll send you a few links, lads.
But
they said, she could have died, you know, a few days into the holiday, and they would have kept her, and then, you know, keep up this facade that she's still alive and stuff. And it's just like, what's like Weekend at fucking Bernie's or something? Like, they're not going to be that cold-blooded. I don't think anyone is. If they did it by accident, they would be still grieving. They would be a total wreck. You know, they wouldn't be able to keep their composure. No chance.
And everyone else would have been asking, where's Madeline? Don't forget that the kids were involved in that Ocean Club.
Yeah,
which would have been something that they would have liked to have gone to every single day. So if, let's say, she had gone missing for 2 or 3 days, they, of all people, would have said, where's Madeline? And they, of all people, would have said to the police, we didn't see her for a few days. So that obviously didn't happen.
Sorry.
No, I'm just saying, like, that obviously didn't happen. So that person on Facebook is an absolute nut job.
Yeah. Another theory was, you know, the way they had the checks, like Jerry would go in at 8:30, Kate would go in at 9, and then somebody else took her turn, one of the other people in the group.
Yeah.
That another theory was that they would have asked him to go in and then discover that Madeline wasn't there, and then he would get the blame for it. So it was like to try and trick him into discovering the body, but then he wasn't going in to look on them at all. He was going in to listen out. That's what they were all doing. They weren't actually checking on their kids. They were listening to see if they were disturbed or crying or what have you.
Yeah, and what did you make of the sighting of a man carrying a child across the road as your one? I think Jane was
Jane Taylor.
Hair. Yeah, what did you make of that?
I think at the time, I think that's been sort of almost completely disproven, because it was a person just taking their child back from the night crash. But the thing about it is, the problem that I had with that is, if you were an abductor of a child, would you just walk down the street with her in your arms like that? Or would you go into a car and drive off? You know, I don't think you would walk, particularly in the direction where the parents are going to be coming up, if you were abducting a child. It just seems a bit kind of...
It does. And I know it was dark, but I can only assume that your one Jane, I can't remember what her surname is.
Tanner.
Jane Tanner would have spent enough time around Madeline McCann to know what she looks like, even in the dark.
Yeah.
So I think she should have been able to recognize her. Like, unless a less Jane.
She's looking at her pajamas and her feet, I suppose. Yeah, that's like, the only thing. Yeah, I mean,
if she had been going into the rooms to check on the children, yeah, she should have probably been able to recognize their pajamas. So she should have been able to recognize Madeline McCann's pajamas if that was her being taken by the abductor.
It wasn't just that, Luxie. It was the fact that the guy carrying the child initially raised absolutely no suspicion, which would lead you to think he was probably walking at a normal pace. And as Sean said, you know, across a main road, whereas, you know, like, you know, if someone, if that was the guy that abducted the child, they'd probably be moving fairly briskly. Even before you knew the child was missing, you'd be like, that doesn't look right. But it was only after the child went missing, she was like, oh, there was a man carrying a child. And as I was saying earlier, that's one of the most common sights you'll see in a child-friendly resort, because kids to be absolutely knackered from all the kind of activities. And then there was an Irish man as well who apparently had spotted another guy carrying a child, and he reckoned that he had the same kind of walk. I think he linked it back to Jerry McCann or something like that, didn't he?
Yes. He'd seen footage of Jerry McCann boarding the plane.
Yeah.
And whatever way he walked, he said, oh, that twigged it. It was him carrying. But again, if you were Jerry McCann, you have a car right there. If you accidentally killed your child, would you be walking in the same way Jane Tanner is coming up or what have you?
Yeah.
It just doesn't seem to make sense.
There were witnesses to say that he was in the Ocean Club at that time as well. Like,
that's,
you know,
exactly, yeah.
And I just think the kind of, the lack of clarity just born so many conspiracy theories, you know, that people just ran away with themselves. You know, the media, the police. I think because there was no kind of definitive line of inquiry, that just opened up a can of worms. And, you know, you even see the kind of the police sketch that they released. I mean, the police over there left a lot to be desired, like, you know.
Yeah, I think a lot of people's suspicion is themselves, their personalities. When they're in interviews, they're quite cold people. You know, they're not very engaging. They're not very warm people when they're speaking. You know, and I think that's probably because they're doctors. You know, they're quite trained to be like this. Yeah. And I think that's sort of like, you know, people sort of, now I don't really buy this, but like, you know, because they're not crying in every picture of them, that's what people sort of think. Oh, look, they look like they're, they don't look like concerned parents.
Yeah.
But then I would point out, do you remember the Philpotts, Mick Philpott?
Yeah, yeah.
He, him and his wife, or girlfriend, were crying, blubbering in every picture, and they killed their
kids. That was the house that burned, Sean.
Yeah. Everything, they were horrible people. Absolutely
horrible people. Yeah.
And so it's people kind of, I think if people watch too much television and they sort of, they have an idea in their mind of how someone's supposed to behave when their child goes missing. And if it doesn't tick those boxes, people then go, oh, they must have done it themselves, which is kind of, you don't know what way you're going to behave until something like that happens to you. And you might be in a state of shock. You might be completely numb to everything.
Do you remember that episode 4 or 5, the Portuguese news reporter was trying to suggest that the McCanns could have been complicit in the disappearance of their child due to the fact that there was about 30 people that entered the room after she disappeared. And what they should have done as rational people is closed off the crime scene to preserve evidence. Yeah. Now,
that's a bit like
like in all fairness, if you lose your child, I don't care how intelligent you're attributed to be, you have every right to behave irrationally. Like, all rational thoughts go out of your head. And suggest that anyone, like, I don't know what person to say, all right, first thing I'm going to do is close off the crime scene after my child has gone looking. It was just a completely preposterous assertion to make, and I thought that was very unfair on them. They didn't deserve that. It just seemed to be like they were completely judged by the Portuguese at that stage, that the only rational explanation was that they got rid of them. And like in 90% of cases, the victim knows, has a personal relationship with the perpetrator of the crime. And that's one thing, that's one thing that will always sway me back to the McCanns, is that of all the people that were likely or could be most likely to be involved in the parents of that child, it's the parents. That's reality. We always have like a natural bias towards assuming that parents will always unconditionally love their children and they would never harm their children. As you've just said, Sean, a very clear example, it does happen. And as well as they might come across, and as hard as is to possibly believe that they actually were involved in the disappearance of their child, you know, they are the first people you have to point the finger at. You have to do that. It's very easy to look past them and say, right, there's no way they could have been guilty of the crime. And that's why I thought it very strange, that double glazing entrepreneur. He said he met Kate McCann for the first time, looked into her eyes, and he absolutely knew that she was innocent. I went, bullshit. That's a complete subjective opinion.
Well, he's probably a bit overdramatic or something anyway.
You can be easily deceived by people.
Well, one thing I can't figure out about that guy, the double glazing multimillionaire, was whether he's really short or just has a massive couch.
Some couch, all right, wasn't it? Jeez.
Yeah. Pretty nice couch.
It was huge. But
I thought his involvement in the documentary, I didn't really see it as necessary, other than funding that Irish guy that was masquerading to be an investigator. He never was.
Yeah, he's the villain of the piece for me. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, fair play to that Scottish guy, though, I have to say, because like, you know, he flew out to Morocco. Now, it was a bit, you're kind of thinking, what the hell is this guy?
He fancies himself as a bit of a fucking James Bond or something.
Similar to Robert Murrah, he was doing no harm. He was just trying to help, like, you know.
I think Robert Murrah got a really hard go at it. Like, he literally just was there as an interpreter. I thought it was really unfair the way they were dragging his name through it when there was no connection to him at all, you know?
He was abducted by the police as well. Shoved into the back of a car and seconded off to a prison and interrogated, which is very strange. Yeah, I did feel sorry for him.
I want to bring up, you know, when Kate went into the room and discovered Madeline wasn't there, there's a couple of discrepancies about that, about how she approached it. Now, I know you can sort of say, well, look, she's panicked, but it's a couple of things that at the time I thought was a bit unusual. I'll go through them here now. I've just gone off the top of your head. But so she went in, she checked, she listened for something. She didn't hear anything. And then the wind sort of blew the door shut on her. Yeah?
Yeah.
And then she sort of opened the door and then she realized that Madeline wasn't there and that the window was open. And then she left the two kids in the room and then ran out. But like, if you were abducting, if it was an abductor, you wouldn't have gone through the window, would you? Like, there was no way of getting through that window. You would have to gone through the door. So it's, if you were to believe that they
with stage a child in your arm.
Yeah.
You know.
And there was no evidence of, but then of course there could be gloves. There was no evidence of fingerprints other than Kate McCann, I think, or Jerry McCann. Like, that's what I think a lot of people thought. It looked like a staged abduction, that she sort of opened the window herself, made it look like someone broke in, then realized you couldn't get in the window. Like, there is sort of some things there. But then in saying that, if you were to just break in, or sorry, just walk in because the door isn't locked, you might just open the window as a sort of a last ditch effort to jump out, you know, if someone discovers you.
Did they not say that the side window could actually be open from the street itself? It wasn't.
Well, it was those sort of blinds outside blinds. It didn't seem that way anyway. But I suppose I'm not saying it can't be, I suppose, either.
It's as I was saying, it's one of those cases that you think you're going down the right lane and then you realize you're not. You have to take a left and then go right. I genuinely can't make my mind up about it.
I would still veer towards an abduction. Like, I suppose there's no evidence of an intruder, but then you don't need to intrude.
How would they have done it, though? Let's say, it's not as if they randomly walked in into an apartment and said, right, we'll just take that girl there. They must have surveilled her.
Well, let's say they were surveilling them. Let's say they were looking for a child to abduct. They would, I suppose, it would catch their eye that they're seeing these seven people sitting there every night in a week. They're probably loud. They're probably having a laugh. You know, having a few drinks. They might attract their attention, and they might put two and two together and say, "No, there's no kids in these apartments." And then if you're watching them, you know, they're off a busy street. You could watch them. They could be surveilled quite easily. You know, it could be two people at least, or even just one, I suppose, in and out. It's very possible. I suppose they left no trace if they did. There's no DNA of anyone else. But it's certainly not completely impossible for that to happen. It is possible for someone just to walk in, pick her up and go.
It's also possible that the abduction took place outside of the apartment because, you know, now don't get me wrong, it's a complete long shot that if, you know, Madeline woke up and wandered outside, that the first person she bumped into had to be someone of that inclination that would abduct her. But, you know, like, you know,
I think,
that Madeline was, well, I suppose you actually said that Madeline wouldn't have been able to open the window. She was too young.
Yeah. It was a kind of a higher window. And she also said that she would have to, I think they had a child lock on the gate as well. So she would have been have to open that. Now an adult could just hop over that, no problem. So there are
child lock on the gate, was there?
Yeah, like a child lock on their sort of porch, I think.
Yeah, okay.
Something like that. So, I mean, that is sort of feasible, but then you kind of have to be Madeline. You'd have to be able to get out of the house in the first place. So I suppose that's probably not possible. I wouldn't imagine. I don't even think she would have been able to open the doors themselves to sort of leverage them. I still think there's plenty of opportunities for someone to have kidnapped her, and without the kidnapping storyline, you're gonna have to, like, is it the parents then that we're assuming did it, and then you have the issue with the body and their timelines and stuff like that, or, you know, there's somebody on the inside, maybe a member of the hotel staff, or, you know, somebody who was around them, maybe even a guest in the hotel. It's still an abduction then. But, you know, someone who's more privy to stuff.
For me personally, it's impossible now to believe that the parents had anything to do with it. Because obviously the parents wouldn't have abducted her, right? Because that just is completely stupid. So what we're suggesting then is that the parents harmed her in some way. And if that was the case, I just don't think that you could cover your tracks that well. You know, there would have been like CCTV of them buying loads of bleach in a shop or something like that, you know, or whatever the case may be. You wouldn't be able to, in my opinion, get rid of the body in any meaning, like in any way that to this day still wouldn't have been found. You know, you wouldn't have been seen acting suspiciously prior to the, you know, the evening of or on the evening of. Like, and then it just, as I said, they continue to this day to like lobby government and things like that to keep up, you know, the search for her. Where, like, if they hadn't, like, if after a year they've given up hope, I think people would have understood that and like it wouldn't have been in any way suspicious. But they're still to this day making it, you know, like, and I know people criticized them at the time for hiring the PR team and things like that. And as you know, like you were saying, Sean, they weren't acting like victims. But I mean, that's just a stupid thing. You hear that in kind of abuse cases as well. Oh, they're not acting like victims. Victims act differently.
Exactly.
You know, so like they were doing what they thought was best to get their daughter back. And you know, I just cannot make a connection between them. You know, between the daughter being harmed and it being coming back to the parents. It seems completely illogical to me. I know what you said, Luxie, is that, 90% of the cases, it's usually, you know, a family member. But we know that because they get caught. And the reason that they get caught is generally because they're so close to it, they leave a rake of clues as to it being them. But if they did harm the child, even though I don't believe the Portuguese police were particularly, you know, were the most competent police force in the world, I think there would have been enough evidence. There hasn't been one rock solid piece of evidence other than a couple of inconsistencies in a timeline. And to me, the inconsistencies, actually make it more believable, because if when they went through the timelines, if it was like eerily accurate between all the people in the group, I'd be like, that's her hair.
Yeah.
You know, so.
And they're not completely outrageous, the inconsistencies anyway. You know, it's just a couple of, they said 20 minutes, they said 30 minutes.
Like if we were out, Sean, we were out, you know, a couple of weeks ago down the pub, if we were all asked to kind of, reconcile our timelines of that night, We'd all be out by like 10, 15 minutes. You know what I mean? Yeah. That's completely normal behavior. And that's for me why I think there's absolutely no, like, you know, there's nothing that suggests other than statistical data from previous cases, which I understand. That's what the police work off a lot. But I just cannot, you know, put it together in terms of they committed the perfect crime, were able to put up a front for 10 years in front of the media without cracking. You know, no one else, even though they were in a large group, knew about it, or if they did, kept it kind of omerta. Mm. You know, they're all doctors who took an oath to protect lives, and we're saying, you know, did they kind of cover up? For me, it's just, it's fairy tale stuff. And unfortunately, you know, it's my belief that she was, an opportunity created, and she was abducted.
Yeah, it's the most logical conclusion to come to. And I agree. It's more unlikely that the parents were involved in it than that she was actually abducted. It probably is the most rational reason for it. But I'm not well versed in abduction cases, but the fact that there was no evidence after she went missing, there's just nothing. I know the police said that she could easily have been escorted off Portugal and taken away to Spain and Morocco, because Morocco was only an hour and a half away by boat. She could have been transported there and then taken elsewhere. That could very easily happen as well.
I suppose there's
very little evidence to concretely assert any case. Whether she's abducted, and that's one thing. I just find it very, very hard to say what happened in it because of that. I could actually read books on it and find way more information and come to a better conclusion. But from what's being presented to me in the documentary and Sky News itself, because that's where I had most of the information from. I can't form an opinion on it.
The thing is, though, you mentioned evidence. If we're to say she killed her, we need a body. And until you find the body, she remains missing.
And, yeah, I know.
You know, it is true that the majority of, you know, children who are killed or missing, it is the parents. But most of those times, there's a body found. And on the body, you would find, you know, evidence of a murder. It actually reminded me a little bit of the JonBenet Ramsey case. Are you familiar with that? Might talk about it because it's kind of like it's one of those things where the body was found, but there's still so many questions about the thing. We might do an episode on that actually. But what I'm getting at is the body was found in the house of this little girl. So obviously somebody in the house killed her, but they claimed it was an intruder. But we'll get into that anyway because there's so much to that story as well.
But I think the
fact that there was nobody ever found, there's no evidence of a body other than the cadaver stuff, the dogs, but we've kind of thrown that out anyway because it's flimsy at best anyway. So I think unless you find something, we have to treat it as a missing person case. And I think that's the way, that's consistent with the parents' story and timeline, and they're still looking for it up to today. So I on the record, I would say I think she was abducted, and I think her parents are just really hard fighting to get her back. And yes, they do have resources and money and contacts. But, you know, I mean, like, people have a go at them because of that. It's like, well, if you have these contacts, why not do it? You know, in that documentary, they mentioned that young boy that went missing. And it was kind of, you know, there was not much resources put towards it. But it's like, because they were campaigning for it, you know, they brought the police, they made phone calls, they made all these trips. That's why we all know about Madeleine McCann. And also the fact that it was a British child in Portugal, not a local child who went missing in his local area. So there is, you know, I think they are just campaigning, and I think fair play to them, you know, for doing it all these years.
Do you not think they've turned her disappearance into a business for themselves?
That's a criticism. They've made something like 10 million or something.
Oh, of course they have.
I disagree with that. Look, see, they put pretty much all the money back into the fund, any money that's been made. Like,
well, they said they paid the mortgage with the Madeleine Reeve. But it's,
I think,
like,
it was two payments and, you know, obviously two mortgage payments, which, you know, is not.
But, like, they're taking great, time off work to look for their child. Like, it's, you know, they still have to pay the rent and stuff, or their, pay off their mortgage. So it's like, if they pay their house, is that not better for their, for them to be able to look? They don't have to worry about, you know, paying their electricity bill and their mortgage. I don't think that's some evidence of that, really, you know?
No, I just find it hard to believe that that's the only financial benefit they've derived from their child going missing. I know that's the narrative they've put out. And I know that's what they're probably going to say. And that's what the trustees of, I'm sure they have trustees in place that manage the funds.
Look, if they were that way inclined, they could have made an absolute fortune from appearing in the Netflix documentary.
They could have done. But at the same time, they could have, if, let's say, they were involved in it, they could have exposed themselves.
There's not a question that hasn't already been asked about them. Like, you know...
No, like in my mind,
they constantly put themselves in front of the media, you know, to be questioned. Yeah. And, you know, like, I mean,
I just think that they're too clean cut. There's something off about.
Well, I'm not
getting that from anywhere other than my own bias and my own opinion of them. They're just too goody-goody. They're too clean cut. They're intelligent.
They're kind of working class people who worked up to be doctors. You know,
but, like, you know, Jerry McCann, you know, he's very, very controlled. He's very, very calm.
Jerry McCann, he's a bit of a dickhead. He's in interviews. He's a bit of a kind of narky sort of with questioning and stuff like that. He's not a very likable person. I think even the detective said that.
Doesn't make him guilty,
that's what I was getting at.
And the other thing I always think of is that he, and as you said, John, like, he's been himself, you know. I'm sure PR people are saying to him, look, you know, oh, it might be the worst idea to smile and just be polite to people and things like that. But, you know, I always think, like, when I see people like that, I was like, well, he's been himself. Like, you wouldn't be advised to behave like that. People would take an instant dislike to you. As you know, as we have. And then, you know, like, where he doesn't seem to care, you know, that could arouse suspicion or whatever, like, or people could form an opinion on him. He's just, look, I'm looking for my daughter. This is me. Yeah. This is how I was before the abduction. This is how I am now. And that's what I've always found through it, that look, it was genuine. You know what I mean? And even, I suppose, even when they said, you know, even the fact that it's so open that they left her alone, you know, and that's probably what led to the abduction, the fact that she was left alone, obviously, you know, like, they were already damned by that kind of thing, you know, like, I think that they have been themselves throughout the process. They've been consistent. They haven't, they've ramped up a lot of kind of media exposure, as Sean said, as you'd do anything to find your child. But, like, I would be more concerned if it looked like he was faking emotion, be it happiness or, you know, overriding sadness or whatever like that. It just seemed to be, look, this is how I am, you know.
Their world tour was very strange, though. I didn't see it whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, like,
but she could have been in any country, you know.
Sorry, Frank.
I mean, if the theory was that she was abducted, you know, when you look at it, there was so many countries talked about, like Belgium, Morocco, and things like that. They just wanted to kind of increase awareness everywhere. Of, look, if you see this girl, get in touch with us. Like,
not to mention there was that paedophile group, the Ring, was it Wonderland or something like that? Wonderland group. They mentioned in the documentary, but, you know, there is evidence that there is a ring in that area. So it's, I think they are the right to.
And there was also the clip where the woman.
No, I'm just saying. Like, I was born in Luxembourg, as you know, and I remember when I was 12 years old, there's a really known, well, paedophile. He's called Marc Dutroux.
I've seen a documentary of him, yeah.
Yeah, he escaped. He escaped from prison. And because of the proximity of my school to the Belgian border, I mean, anywhere as close to the border in Luxembourg, because it's that small, like, we were advised, don't talk to any strange men. Be wary of this guy. And that was really the first time I'd ever heard of a paedophile. I had no idea. I never heard of it before. Like, I was only 12. So that's when I began to learn that Belgium, it's one of those jokes that, you know, that people crack about countries, and there's definitely some jokes that we cracked when we were younger about Belgium, but Belgium is very well known for paedophilia.
It was covered up the whole trial. I remember seeing, we'll talk about that as well, but it's, the judge cried, I think it was so corrupt, the whole thing.
Do you remember, like, and it wasn't given much detail in the documentary, but where the woman came down the stairs to find the man in the sitting room with her door.
There seemed to be
a lot going on around the area at the time with kind of people, fake charity workers and things like that, you know? I don't think it's too big a leap to, you know, to jump to that she was abducted. Now, what I do find very hard is that, and I've mentioned this before, is that I don't know why you would target that girl, because she was going to become very famous because, as you said, Sean, she was an English girl, the daughter of doctors, you know, and, you know, I know you said in one of the kind of things, like, was she abducted for it, you know, a family who couldn't have kids? Like, you know, Madeleine McCann was not someone you could have, you know what I mean? Everyone was looking for her, you know, you couldn't, you know, you would have had to keep her extremely well hidden.
I suppose that if you were a child abductor, you don't know that at the time. You just think, I need to get a blonde girl because whoever, the client or whatever.
Yeah, it's, they're probably not smart at the people. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Look, so your final opinion on it anyway, you're the most, I think for me and Frank are dead down that it's an abduction, but you still seem a little bit unsure.
I am unsure. There's something I find off-putting about McCann's. That's just a personal opinion. It's a subjective opinion. I'm basing it on absolutely nothing. I could be talking through my absolute arse. And people listening probably think I am. It's one of those things where I'd say it's probably not you, but I'm still going to keep an eye on you anyway. I see where you lads are coming from as well. Most likely scenario is that she was abducted. By who or for what reason? I suppose the who and the what reason aren't important. The fact is she disappeared. I do feel that the parents are in some way guilty of her disappearance, because I know they left her for 5 nights and they were fine the other nights, but you just can't do that in any day and age. They have to accept responsibility for their actions. They were selfish. They didn't prioritize their children on the holiday. You have to prioritize your children at all times, 24 hours a day. They did not do that. So in some ways, I find it hard to like them for that reason alone. Does that make them guilty of the crime? Absolutely not. She was most likely abducted. And if she was abducted, as Frank has alluded to, I would find it hard to believe that she's still with us today.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really sad note. If she was abducted, you do kind of hope that it was a childless couple, and we find her, you know, maybe she doesn't even know she's Madeleine McCann, you know, but it's a very dark place to go to think that she's been killed by the abductor because she's such a hot commodity now, you know, doesn't bear thinking about, really.
No, it doesn't. Yeah. Kind of sad way to end the show, isn't it?
Yeah.
Sure. All right. Well, look, we'll leave it there. But I suppose if anyone's listening to the podcast and, you know, wants us to delve deeper into the subject or has any questions about it that they'd like us to address, make sure to leave us comments on any of our social media platforms, and you know, we'll delve back into it. But I suppose, lads, thanks a million for your contributions. It's a case that will rumble on and on. And I suppose hopefully one day we do find out what happened and closure can be provided for everyone. But until then, thanks a million, and we'll see you again.
Get up the yard.